You are now listening to Vigilantes Radio. The people's choice for quality art, interviews, special guests, music, and hot topics. Hosted by Demetrius D.D. Blast Reynolds and co-hosted by the Vigilantes. Pogosi, Subba Bra, Banditti, and Controvert. Call in to join the mix at 602-753-1654 or hop in via Skype by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/onlyonemediagroup. All episodes of this podcast are available for free download at www.onlyonemediagroup.com. Immediately after each broadcast, we welcome all. Topics and ideas, email us at theradio@onlyonemediagroup.com. Enjoy the show.
Oh, you feel free. And that was Vexine creeping to you. Wowzers, we are up to 14,000 listeners, 865,000 downloads worldwide, and it is all because of you. We are the people who have dedicated their lives to music, art, and research in every aspect, and we want to allow you the opportunity to tell your story. Man, we've had celebrities on our show, from Grammy Award-winning artists to actors, authors, professors, and it doesn't matter really who you are or what walk of life that you come from. Just come on our show and talk to us to book an interview or just to share a story. Email us at theradio@onlyonemediagroup.com. I'm passionate about what I do, just as passionate about what you do. And together we can get your voice heard by the people that should hear it. So let's create something incredible. Hello and welcome to another episode of our podcast, Vigilantes Radio. Thank you as always for tuning in and being a part of our audience family. If you like information on how to call in, ask questions, or speak to our guests, you can always dial 602-753-1654 or hop in. We just revamped our website, and you can now call in directly from the website, you know, just in case you don't have the link or the phone number programmed in your phone. Just hit the call in button and you will connect with us live. I believe it runs through Google Voice. So yeah, very cool feature. And that is probably one of the best connections, is directly from the browser. You can use a tablet, your cell phone, or your PC or Mac, whichever you choose. But just remember, all episodes are available for free download as the show ends on our website or at Blog Talk. And that goes for all past shows as well. And tonight's episode is the Vexine interview. So let's go ahead and move on through with the introduction. It's just me tonight. I am the host, Dini Mussolini. The rest of the cast is actually, they're not off. I'm just in Atlanta right now. We've been touring and we got to keep the show going. So we're going to take a real quick break and play another song by Vexine called Hornet's Nest, and then we'll be back.
I'm afraid to even touch her. All I can do is stand.
Again, that was Vexine with Hornet's Nest. Thank you so much for taking some time to speak with us, Vexine. You got one informative website, my friends. Believe me, I could have done an interview easily double this size with the amount of information I was able to find out about you. So listeners, truck on over to www.vexine.com. That's V-E-X-I-N-E.com. to see what the fuss is all about. And if you're in the V8 area, make sure to catch a show or two and get vaccinated, which is catchy, real cool. Their schedule is listed ever so neatly on site as well. I am one with all of that, because that's not only awesome for me, that's also awesome for your fans as well. I really appreciate it when an artist will take their time to explain their side of the entire story and let us in on the real you. And that's very cool, in my opinion. Anyhow, for the moment, let's assume that I know nothing about you guys. Like, we're just going to scratch all my research. I know completely nothing. But anyway, so let's take a second or two at the beginning, not only to welcome them here live with us, but let them introduce themselves. What's up, Vexine?
Hey, how you doing, Danny? We are Vexine. How you doing?
Doing good.
Can you hear us?
Good. Yes.
Good. I'm Sarah Gleason. Over here to my right is Jorge Santa Maria, our drummer. Michael Skiffington is our bass player. He's right here. And
hello.
Hey, Paul Pierce, our lead guitar player and songwriter and vocalist, is over here as well.
Hello.
Say hey, Paulie. And yeah, thanks for having us on the show.
Oh, glad to have you guys here, Vexine. That's correct, right? Vexine's not Vexine.
Yeah, Vexine. Yep. It's kind of Vaccine, Vixen, Sexy, all at the same time. I don't know. It's all combined into one.
That's super cool. All right. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you're talking about people not knowing anything about us. We describe our sound as sexy, supercharged rock and roll. And at the end of the day, that's what we are, is a rock band, a female-fronted rock band with these three amazing musicians right behind us, right behind me. And we write our own stuff, and we're on our third record. It's called Little Sin, and which you just were kind enough to play two tracks off of the record. And so that's us.
All right. So how does your sound separate you guys from the rest of the bands out there?
I think we take a real elemental approach to rock and roll. We don't dress it up a lot. And we basically go back to what I would think of as, the traditional hard rock foundation of what most modern music comes from. And so, in that sense, we're kind of retro in the fact that we we take the technology backwards in order to present something that's new. And so, you know, we skip back a few decades in terms of our influences, but we bring it right up into the present and try to write songs that are, you know, interesting and vital and get people, you know, banging their heads to it.
Oh, yeah. All right. Taking a quick look at your main page real quick, you can see clearly that you guys got a lot of love for many facets of the entertainment industry, or from what I can tell, just living a fabulous life from like Sarah Gleason, like she mentioned, sexy to supercharged. And you guys are performing at a church in October for the Oktoberfest in Virginia, to vintage everything to the most important element, rock. You're a part of it all. I would think that it would be almost impossible to balance all of this out and incorporate so many things that I get enough time to spend on that main part that I really love and want to do for the rest of my life. Kind of like how I'm consistently here, you know, writing scripts, blogs, coaching artists just outside of the studio with full recording capabilities all day, which I'd rather be there. But as we all know, life can jump in the way quite quickly sometimes, and instead of where we want to be, we end up somewhere else out of obligation, self-motivation, or the sense of responsibility. So truthfully, how do you find the balance between all of these things that you do? Because let's face it, there's so many more things that you're doing as well, in addition to what's listed that we can, you know, see from the website. So either you're incredibly organized, or there is in fact like maybe 8 of yous instead of 4. How do you find the time to do it all, and how do you make sure that the focus gets applied to the right place?
Well, I think part of it is that we are all, you know, let's just, to put it kindly, say that we're all adults or of adulting age.
And organized.
We're organized ourselves. We're all self-starters, and, you know, we have families, and, actually, the drummer and I, Jorge and I, we are a couple, and we've been together for 13 years. And there's our number one rule is, no matter what we do, nothing gets in the way of our love and our relationship. And that's how we guide our ship, so to speak, is by what is best for us as a couple. Paul has a wife and 3 beautiful daughters, and I think is what guides his life is what's going on with him. Now Mike, he's gone rogue. You know, he just does whatever the hell he wants to do, and you know, he's the wild card in the band.
I gotta say, to answer your question, I think the reality is that because we're a band, no one person does everything.
Right.
And there's 4 of us, so we each do something different.
Divide and conquer.
Not just with music, but with the business side of music. So nobody has to do everything. And so we all have time to do all that needs to be done. And like Sarah was saying, you know, we all got commitments outside of music that are important to us. And they are actually what enable us to create music, not just logistically, but inspirationally. So it wouldn't happen if we didn't have complicated lives. It just wouldn't happen.
And it doesn't hurt that we all really enjoy each other's company. We've all been friends, true friends, for 9 or 10 years.
Yeah.
And these guys are, you know, the man I love, and my 2 brothers are in, you know, not from my mother, but you know, these are my brothers in this band with me. So it's fun. It's a good day's work to be with these guys.
Definitely. How long have you guys been a band?
Well, as Beck seen, we've been a band for about, what, 4 years?
4 years,
four
I years. Guess. 3 years.
Now, we've been playing music together as people for about a decade.
Yeah, it's been about 10
years. Oh, wow.
Yeah, cool. In different situations. And we came to be Vaccine after we had a night where we were playing in a different band together. And one of the guys, the front man in the band, got delayed and couldn't show up. And we were stuck starting without him, you know. We'd never done that before, and so we just started. And it was like a moment where you just kind of looked at each other and said, oh, this is like what it needs to be. It needs to be the 4 of us, nobody else. And that's what really was the genesis of the band, was that moment in this little brewery in Richmond we were playing at, where we just sort of looked at each other and said, this is the sound we need to develop. And so we made the change. We started this band and
put on my big girl crinolines and become the front person.
Yes. So Little Sin is our third record. You know, we got our original record, our first record, named Vex Dean. Okay. Then we got a live record called Live from Nashville. We played a gig there, and then it was recorded live. And then we have Little Sin, which is our third record.
Yeah, this is Jorge, the drummer, and I think one of the things that is important to note about how we go about making the time and balancing everything is the fact that we really have a focus around the music. And just to give you some more insight into how we made that transformation, that band that we were playing in, was completely different focus in music. It was more alt country and that kind of thing. And without, it was really kind of interesting that the twang element was removed, and we were able to see and have a glimpse into the kind of music that we could play. And that was the inspiration. And I think we all just felt really committed to that, and it has just grown. And as the other members have noted, is it's not only just the music, but the companionship and just the commitment to one another as friends that makes it really easy to make the time to spend together, sometime late nights and that kind of thing, to make it happen.
Like right now, it's 11:20 p.m. Yeah, we're all in my living room.
That's cool. What do you feel like are the most important things to include in a song when you're writing? Of course, you know, aside from music and words, I'm talking about the nitty and the gritty. What does a song need to have included for it to, make the grade and end up on your albums?
Well, we bring a lot of stubs to rehearsal, if you know what I mean by a stub, you know, like part of a song.
Right.
And sometimes it'll just be mine, and sometimes Sarah and I will get together and we'll work something out. And the songs that have really worked for us are the ones that we start playing them together, and then all of a sudden they just take a life of their own because of the interaction of us as musicians. So, like, good example is that first song you played tonight, Creep Into You, started off literally, quite literally, as me making up a blues song while I was watching television and drinking whiskey one night into like a little recorder, and then I showed it to Sarah, and it was this sort of jam, you know, a jumbled mess. And we straightened it out, and she wrote some lyrics, and we brought it in rehearsal, and then all those instrumental parts in that song came out in rehearsal sort of spontaneously. And it went from being really kind of a mellow blues song and this big rock and roll powerhouse, like almost instantly.
AKA part of the Jump.
Yeah.
The trilogy.
It was just this thing. And so that happens a lot, you know, and it's, we'll bring in a song, it's like, well, it's like this, guys. And then all of a sudden it changes completely over the course of about 2 or 3 hours. And that's when we know it's going to want to keep.
And you know, you mentioned up at the top of the introduction, you talked about get vaccinated. Well, that's exactly, I think, what we do with those stubs. We, they come in, and we inject them with the uniqueness that each one of us bring to the table. You know, Sarah's got the big, powerful voice. Paul has a style of guitar playing that is reminiscent of, you know, really hard, crunchy guitar kind of riffs. And, Mike has a real smooth sort of almost just, you know, undertone of bottom that
awesome.
Just...
you get an undertone of awesome.
And I come in with the drums and just hang on, to be quite honest. And I think we all bring a certain element to each song, and until each one of us has found the element that we want to bring to that particular song, the song doesn't make it there yet. Until each one of us feel like, okay, I've found my groove, I have found my part in this song, and then once that comes together, and then we step back and listen to it, sort of independently in raw recordings, it doesn't get on the record until it happens like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And musically, you know, we're real funny about how songs are generated. And in the beginning, I think we tried writing lyrics first and then fitting music to it, but that doesn't work for us. You know, Paul and I both write prolifically, I'd say. We're always writing something lyrically. And Paul writes musically. I don't have the music theory knowledge to write. I hum into my phone. I know what I'm doing when I, you know, humming, but I don't know what I'm writing. I don't know how to write it.
All right, now, she says that, but that's not true.
Well,
if you listen to our title track, the entire melody of that song, my wife and I went and spent the night over at y'all's place.
Oh, yeah.
And we woke up the next morning, and you were making breakfast, and you started singing this melody. And I started playing, I made accompaniment underneath it, and we structured it, and that became the title track of the album.
No, that's true. That and Tantillo. We did that with Tantillo.
Yeah, and it was so, you know, Sarah Gleason says, oh, I don't know anything about music. But then she's got, like, perfect pitch and melody, and you're like,
and stop it.
You don't need to know anything about music if you got that.
But admit that the usual
right.
the thing that we usually do is Paul will come up with some super great guitar riff that is, and then we kind of build a song around that. And then from this stockpile of lyrics that we have, we can find lyrics that fit the mood and the sense of the song. And then when the rhythm section says, oh, hell yeah, that's the one, then we know that we're on to something. But they veto everything. Bass and drums,
yeah,
they have veto power.
No, we don't.
There's a lot of blood on the floor. I'll just put it that way. I hope that makes sense.
Oh, wow.
we've said too much.
Oh, no, keep going.
Hello, Jeannie. How are you doing with us, darling?
Yes, do
so, yeah, I mean, if you want to play one of, you know, like, a good example of that, like we said, Little Sin's a good one, and Tantilla Gardens is a good one, where Sarah came in with an idea in her head, and then...
Well, you know, I want to bring up Tell Me. Because
I was just thinking of that.
You know, Tell Me for the longest time was my favorite, and you know, how do we select a single? How do we go about? And that was my single for the longest time, and the way that happened was, as I remember, Sarah and Paul and I were sitting around with an acoustic guitar at our house.
Yeah, I remember.
And we were just working on this thing, but. It felt monotonous, and for some reason, at that moment, Paul and Sarah were working separately, or together, separate from me, and I was working on developing some kind of a, you know, gig post or something on the computer, but was...
You were acting like
not,
you weren't listening,
and
you
I was
were totally
like
eavesdropping.
Yeah. Right, I wasn't really interested in listening to what they were developing, but...
Did you hear that? We weren't interested.
But something caught my ear, and I said, Paul, this needs a bass solo.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
And I didn't know why I said that. I had no reason to say that, but I just felt like this needs a book. And we worked it out. It starts off with the bass. And it was just, it's those little small inspirations that happen. And
we're also afraid to tell
always,
each other now.
Everyone
gets what they want.
No, we're not.
But we're all open to those ideas, though.
Yeah.
That's what I like about it, is that we're all open to the ideas and go, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Bass solo, no one's ever really talked about that before, and let's see what happens. And it really is one of my favorite songs on the album.
Yeah. I'm glad you like it.
I do.
Good. Excellent. We're just over here congratulating each other, so.
No, you guys are fine.
He's like, I can't get these crazies off of my show.
No. I enjoy, like, guests who have a lot of stories and, you know, a collective inside story, you know. It's pretty authentic for me. It's like I'm sitting in on, you know, listening to, like, the secret stories around the campfire.
You're around the campfire with us right now, that's
for
sure.
Yeah,
for
sure.
Here, awesome. Have a drink. Pass you one. There we go.
Yeah,
cheers.
It's like three empty bottles of bourbon here. So
this could be a clean Christian show. We don't know. Okay. I'm just saying.
No, it's not.
Okay, good. Here you go. All right, enjoy a drink. Have a cocktail.
Oh, yeah. All right, you guys have yourself listed as retro future rock. So spell it out for all the old people out there who don't even know
that
retro future rock is. Go ahead.
Yeah, that was part of a review we got on our record, and we saw it and we're like, oh my god, that's totally right, you know, because. You know, we do try to write songs that are current and, you know, very accessible pop-wise, you know, in terms of their structure. But we really are pulling from a long history of rock and roll conventions, you know. So it's guitar-driven. The song structures are anthematic in their orientation. Mm-hmm. You know, we want you to be able to sing along with them and so forth. But we're not like... You know, we've completely skipped over, you know, I think what I call a recent past. You know, we go back further than that.
And then vocally, you know, people call me a chanteuse, you know, that my inspirations are from Nina Simone, Etta James, Patsy Cline, Loretta Lynn, you know, Blondie. I mean, that you name it, if it's Tina Turner. I like girls that get up and shake it, that are sexy, that have got balls when they sing, and you know they've got. I'm not kidding you. It sounds awful to say, but
girls with balls.
Now I like a little ass behind vocals. I like it to mean something. When you hear somebody sing the story, I want it to go into you. I want you to feel like you're a part of the story, or you can somehow relate to it. And you're not just up there doing karaoke, kind of singing someone else's song. I want our songs to feel authentic.
And we want it to be so no one else can do them.
I like that, too. I like that, too.
I mean, because no one can sing like you.
God bless your heart.
And the only way that we can build a band around a voice as powerful as yours is to have a foil to it and in a really solid rhythm section that just sort of lays everything out. And so my guitar has got to be as strong as your voice, or the whole thing falls apart.
That's exactly right.
Well, and I think about that description of retro future rock, and many times people ask me to describe our music, and I'll say the thing that we normally say, which is sexy supercharged rock, and they go, so what is that? And then my next move is to say, imagine. You know, Nina Simone fronting the Foo Fighters. And, if you think about that...
Amy Winehouse fronting the Who.
Well, but if you think about that, we're connecting retro, so Nina Simone, sort of retro, soulful, you know, big voice like that, and connecting that with, you know, somebody like the Foo Fighters, which is really sort of future... The now rock, if you will, and so that kind of connects those two things, the future and the retro. So maybe that's a way to explain it. I'm not really sure.
And our look
I was inspired by that just now.
Well, I think that's a good way of saying it, because the whole thing is, you know, we want the melodies of the song to be complicated. We want them not to be just monochromatic things, you know.
There's math rock in one of our songs.
You're right, but we want the melodies to have some depth to them, and in order to really showcase that, you've got to have a instrumental presentation that is stripped down. Mm-hmm. And so the stripped down part means we don't do samples, we don't do electric keys, we don't do like horns and stuff like that that would distract from the fact that Sarah is singing this big melody. And the big melody is what we want to be right out front. So in that sense, we borrow a lot from the Ramones in terms of stripping back the instrumentation so that you know where everything is. You know, and that's kind of why we say it's retro future, that we go back to the analog path.
Wait, we went back to the future?
Yeah, we did, man. We went to the analog path.
121 gigawatts.
great. and make modern music with it. That's our goal.
Yeah. And our look is quite, my everyday look is pretty retro in general, and then get these guys up there in their black suits and their hats, and they look hot to trot, and I'm up there throwing Kremlins around, and it's a good show. You complete me.
Yeah.
You had me at hello.
Well, but you know, I think that's part of the live show, right, is to be able to see the music. And what we strive in our live shows to do is to really, you know, let people see the music through us in our physical presentation of what we're doing. So I think that is the last part of that, and certainly that doesn't come across so much, you know, in a recorded situation. But I think one of the things that we were able to achieve in the last record is, although it is recorded and it is a studio release, it does have that sort of live sound, and that part of what we were trying to achieve is let people experience us through the album, but have the sense of what it's like to see us live.
Hey, Jeannie?
Yes.
Are you there, darling?
Yes.
I'm looking at Twitter right now. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking at Twitter right now. I see that you're coming to Hopewell.
Yes,
Virginia.
The 24th.
On the 24th. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. What do you? I'm interviewing you now. What are you going to be doing?
I'm performing, actually.
What?
Yeah.
Tell me what you...
I am one half of a rock hip-hop group, and it's just me that's going out there this time.
So it's going to be just you?
Yeah. We do that from time to time, because I have solo material as well.
Awesome! Because that's not too far from us. Beacon Theater.
Yeah, how far is that?
What's the Beacon?
Yep, at the Beacon.
Half an hour? Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome. Sorry, I was just tweeting and saw you.
So we'll have to come.
We'll have to say hello.
I hope we get a chance to.
I know.
Is that the 24th of October?
No, this month.
That's 2 days from here.
2 days from now.
Oh. Oh, my.
Saturday night.
Oh, my.
Sorry to stall the interview. What else?
Sorry, we stopped there.
Sorry, I derailed to interview you, honey.
No, it's cool. So, what's been important in the writing of the songs for the latest release, Little Sin, which we have a few tracks queued up on our break? We have the song Little Sin and Tintilla Gardens queued up. So, we'll get a chance to dive into those two. So what I mean, like, what have been the ingredients in the music, you know, things along the way that you discovered that has become essential to the songwriting process? Like, what have you found throughout the writing and recording process of this particular album?
I think what is probably important is to recognize that these songs are written over about a 2.5 year period. So there's a lot of time that went into both the writing of the songs and what went on in our lives when we wrote them. And so, like, the first half of the record was this discovery of all this, of us coming together as a band musically in a way that we hadn't before, where everything just kind of came together in rehearsal, and so it's very live sounding. And then the songwriting part of it in the second half of the record is where we really had a lot of songs developed over that period of time that we hadn't had a chance to get together on. We did. And so, you know, the album had a long maturity path. is what I'm trying to say. And in that maturity path, in the time that it took to do it, a lot of things happened to us personally that kind of changed what we wrote about.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why if you listen to the record as a whole, you kind of hear its trajectory change towards the end of it, and it's a very interesting thing to hear from beginning to end.
And we do write from, I'd say everything we write is somehow based in personal experience. We don't just decide, I'm going to write about the color of the sky, you know, and write about the color of the sky. We don't write it unless we have felt it in some form or fashion.
So, and I mean, good examples of that is, you know, Tantilla Gardens, you having a conversation with, you know, your granny about this place.
Yeah, it's an old dance hall in Richmond. It used to be here, and when my grandmother turned 90, I asked her about it and if she'd ever been there to Tantilla Garden, and she said she hated it. But my other grandmother, who has since passed away, had told me that it was the most magical place that she'd ever been to in her life. It had a retractable rooftop that rolled away, and it was
oh,
pretty
wow.
amazing. Yeah, oh yeah. And she said the scent of gardenias was in the air, and the orchestra would play under the stars. Man, I'm not kidding.
The Eagles
The Eagles did not play there. Glenn Miller played there, you know, the Dorsey Brothers. And, you know, you brought your own liquor in a brown bag. And, well, anyway, this place fell into disrepair in the late 60s, early 70s because of the hippies. Everybody knows
oh,
that.
No.
Oh, no. The
hippies. Then they did the classic thing is making it to a parking lot. So now it's
a
parking
lot.
It's asphalt.
Yeah, so I get to see it every day
that
I drive down in Richmond. And get to see the parking
so there's
lot.
That.
Oh, wow.
And then there's...
Yeah, it's kind of sad, depressing.
But to cheer things up a bit, you know, we do have one cover song on the record that we pulled out of our mutual respect for Elvis Costello.
Oh, I Want You.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that was intended to be a live cut, purely from start to finish. It was like a studio check. And the live performance portion of it was so good, we had to put it on the record. And then we went and we cleaned up some things. And, you know, Sarah came on and did this, like, breathtaking performance on it. So you did, man. You got to listen to it. You got to hear. Anyway, it is a cover, but we're really proud of our rendition of it. And then the last song on the record is one that I wrote, like, at least 6 years ago.
The zombie song.
Yeah. And... I'd written it for that guy that was in the band before, for him to sing, and he never would learn it. And so we pulled it out to end this record on, and it's a very appropriate end to the record in terms of energy and, the whole nine yards. So.
It's a zombie love story.
And I have a video of Paul doing that vocal.
You should not show
in
it.
And I keep it for myself.
That's blackmail.
You're vibrating, son.
It's an unbelievable... show of energy.
When you hear it, you understand I had to put every ounce of myself into that.
Yes,
vocal.
You did.
You are.
It was really good.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there we go.
All right. We're going to take a break right here. Get into some more tracks by Vexine.
Thank you.
So. Just do me a favor, guys, listeners out there. If you're on the browser, you can click on the description of the show, and you'll see their mini bio is listed there with their website and Reverb Nation, CD Baby link, Facebook link. So make sure you jump in with them, connect. You could even call Hori, which is also the band manager and percussionist, and connect with him if you want to book Vexine out to your city.
Yeah.
So hit the pause button on the Blacklist Season 3 if you jumped on that tonight. Stick on some headphones and let's get into Vexine Little Sin.
Getting such a mess.
Tantilla Gardens by Vexine. And we are back live. Great, great, great music. Man, I'm really digging it. Really, really digging it.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yes, I need to come out to one of you guys' shows.
Well, that's a fine idea.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
You should stick around here for a while when you come.
Yeah. When is the next one?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Oh, my God. We were just going over the corner.
October 15th.
It's Gordonsville. Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right, so we play a lot around Richmond, so spring Creek is October 7th. Is that right?
Yeah.
And that's in Gordonsville, Virginia, right outside of Charlottesville. And then October 15th is Oistoverfest at St. Thomas Church in North Richmond. That's an open event.
We don't usually run the church circuit. But
no.
There's oysters and beer at this one.
There is a fantastic beer truck, and they do pull in the river oysters. It's pretty amazing. Anyway, there's that, and then what do we got after that, George? We got stuff running all the way through December.
October 29th at Tobacco Company Club, we will be our Halloween weekend show.
Yeah, down in downtown Richmond, and then you got it open.
And then Vic, we're at the Triangle in Williamsburg, Virginia, November 15th.
Yeah.
And then we're at the Center of the Universe Brewing.
Y'all like brewing's good.
How far is Ashland from Hopewell? How far is that?
I've got it.
Ashland from Hopewell? That's
45
minutes.
Oh my God, I thought it was on the other side of the universe. Sorry about that.
Yeah. And then, you know, we've got and our final show of the year, which is going to be a really, really bang up show. In fact, we just added a band called Shagwolf out of Charlottesville, and we've got the Hoax Hunters at our local crew here in Richmond, and that's going to be at the Canal Club December 17th, and that is going to be the place to be that night, because we've got some really powerhouse bands that are going to be with us, so we're looking forward to that.
All that to say, you can go to www.vexine.com and go to our schedule page and find all of our shows listed right there for you to see.
All of our shows.
Boom. Even the ones we forgot.
Yeah.
Definitely. All right. With all of the blood on the floor.
That's right. Blood is on the floor. It's quite slippery here.
I know. We've got it cleaned up.
Get off the bleach, Pierce.
How did you go about establishing the impact of the first set of songs on an album? Like, did you guys kick off a single to get things started?
No, we do have a single from the record, but when we were putting together the song sequence, we listened to the whole thing about 5 million times, and the songs just we thought about, like,
natural transition.
Yeah, if you listen to the album. If you're sitting there in your car and you're listening to it while you're driving around, what works? And that's kind of how we framed it. So, you know, we did about a million different arrangements in our iPods and so forth so that we could test that out, you know.
And the single kind of came out of that kind of like a pearl in an oyster, I guess. It just was the one that just was...
Yeah, that was kind of a last-minute song.
Yeah, it just kind of became the single out of the collection of songs, but we didn't really identify that until after the CD was cooked, really.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think happened, or that we tried to do, is emulate again the live show, and most of our live shows, especially if we're doing a power set. In a showcase type of a situation, we normally start that with a really heavy, crunchy guitar opening to get folks' attention, and Caught Up in the Tears is just that song. And so it really opens up and it makes you feel like you're at that concert or that live show.
Yeah.
And then from there, as they said, you just sequence them in the way they make sense and where they transition.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Which brings me to a topic that's not really listed here, but I typically ask majority of the guests about their theory on the actual release of music. Like, what's your whole idea? Are you with the traditional single to single to single and then album, or actually putting the album together as a collective and then working the album?
We chose to go with the collective album release first, and then followed it up with an individual. We followed it up with one single release, and we'll have another single release at the beginning of the year. We wanted our songs to be viewed in a collection first.
Mm.
And it's almost more of a reminder of the collection by having the singles
released periodically. And then we can do video releases with the singles as follow-ups just to but we really wanted those songs to be seen as a whole first, and then we can individually focus on them over the next, you know, few months or several months.
Okay, I mean, what's your theory behind all releasing it that way?
Well, it kind of goes, well, I'll tell you what it is. All right, when I was growing up many decades ago, when you went on to, you got off of the top 40 radio, because that's all there was, mm-hmm. and you listened to the late night radio, you heard these records that you never, ever heard otherwise, and they were always playing the entire record as sort of a feature on Friday night. And so the example is I would go in on Friday night, and FM 100 in Memphis would play, "There's a new record that you've never heard of from so-and-so." And you'd listen to that thing for the entire, you know, half hour or hour or however long they stretch it out. And then you decide for yourself what songs do I like on it. Then over time, that band would have singles come out from that. And it was sort of a way of being discovering the band first in their entirety, and then discovering the singles that they liked and as they go. Now, of course, that cuts both ways, because you're trying to make a calling card for people that have never heard you before as an introduction. And so as a band, you've got to choose a song that, like, really is catchy and gets people to sing along even if they don't know the words. And that was entirely the rationale behind our selection for Empty Hole as our first single, because it was a high-energy song. It's a lot of fun to play. Sure is a lot of fun to listen to. And at the end, there's a like sing-along part that it's just easy to remember and engage with. And that's what really guided us on that. Now, for our next single, we have a lot of options. And, of course, we've talked about some of those songs tonight. You've played some of those songs tonight. And we haven't definitively decided which one is going to be the one. But we are working on a variety of things with regards to video and things like that that would match up to that song in the early part of next year.
Okay, cool. Cool deal. All right, you guys mentioned self-production briefly in the bio. I'm assuming you felt this played a major role in the overall end sound of the album Little Sin. How so? Was it simply a matter of better access to better equipment or more studio time, or was there more to it than that? What was it about the production of, you know, the latest album that stood out to you?
Well, you know, each time we've done this, we've learned a little bit more about the process, you know, and I've been doing this for a long time personally, but I will tell you that on this record, we went out to the big studios in town to do our basic tracking in order to take advantage of the guy with the $10,000 kick drum, you know, that sort of thing. But when it came down to overdubs and mixing and polishing, we do all of that ourselves. And I have a home studio that I've built over the years that, you know, pretty close to the industry standard on many levels and exceeds on some. So it gives us the opportunity to take our time with the overdub spot so we don't feel like we're running a meter. And we can concentrate on not just the performance, but the actual melodies that we're playing and the parts that we're doing, not just the execution of it. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we got to control, too, how we wanted the end product to sound. We wanted a live sound. We didn't want it to sound overproduced and super squeaky clean and polished. We wanted it to sound like the stage show, and that's something I don't think you find a lot nowadays, is to listen to a record and to really, when you go to a show, what you hear in the record, that's what you hear in our live show. And that was important to us as a band, is for that live stage show sound to translate into the recording. And we were able to control that by Paul in the production on this.
Yeah, we were able to Yeah, so here's a good example. Is it a band we did the other a gig with a few weeks ago, and they had this highly, produced live show with a lot of sampled stuff, and it sounded great and everything. But there were moments in the live performance where it sounded unnatural to the room. You know, it sounded processed. And that's something we don't want to happen with our live performances. We want our live performances to, start with the studio version you heard that you've been playing and then go from there so that the live portion of the performance it augments or improves on what you heard in the studio, makes it more exciting or goes off in a direction we didn't do in the studio and makes it unique. And it's not just a recital. I think that's the thing we want to try to make sure we accomplish.
Definitely, definitely. So where do you feel like the music you're making would do the best when looking at the entire globe? Everyone tends to start and stay where they are, but you're in a unique situation that potentially could see this project move in many different directions or become based anywhere that it can perform best based on the backgrounds of each band member. Is the music of Vaccine made for Virginia, or is it potentially suited better for different scenes elsewhere?
I think it's for any scene that likes rock and roll that's pretty much purified.
Mm-hmm.
And, the way we've got the arrangement of the instruments and arrangement of our presentation with, I've been talking about, I think anybody who likes good rock and roll is going to like this. You know, somebody who, likes a completely different mix of music probably is going to think we sound a little primitive. And that's okay with me. That's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to put together real straightforward music that is easy to remember, easy to engage with.
Yeah, now, the only other thing that I would add to what Paul just said was, is that, it's important to us to connect with people that really want to listen to live music. One of the things that unfortunately is going by the wayside in the industry is that appreciation for the amount of work, the amount of energy, the amount of commitment that goes into performing live. And it's not, there's a segment of the population that really appreciates that live rock and roll show still. And that's the target audience for us. And I think that you will find pockets of those kinds of people pretty much anywhere. And we've had some attention from even, from Europe and places like that.
Oh, yeah.
Where
we're being played in 8 cities on regular rotation in Columbia, South America.
Yeah. And
that's
kind of cool. That
is awesome.
Hello.
What's up, Columbia?
And so, mm-hmm. So there are pockets of people even around the world that still want to listen to live rock and roll. And there's not that much of it, and we want to be part of sort of bringing it back, just the way people are bringing back vinyl, and all of that is coming back. Well, I think people are going to go back to the staples. When you get tired of eating cupcakes, eventually you go back to
steak,
or something.
Well, and vocally, You hear so much on the radio these days with voices being auto-tuned or having
everything snapped to the grid.
Everything snapped to the grid, and there's so many choruses put on the voice and everything. And we try to, we definitely keep the vocals very authentic. They're very stripped down, and I like that. I like to use my voice as an instrument for people to hear what I'm doing, what I'm singing, how I'm singing it. And I feel like that's kind of old school these days. You don't, there's usually a lot of help. You don't have to be a fantastic vocalist to be a front person or a lead singer. But I want to show people that, it's still very important, especially in this band. It's incredibly important to have some chops, and to so I try to
incorporate not only the vocals but the stage show into it as well. We want you to it was a movie we saw once that said that people hear what they see, and we want you to hear it something fantastic when you listen to the record, but when you see the live show, we want that to be
more than the
experience. We want it to be exponentially glorious. We want you to
and you said something a second ago there, Jorge, that I want to make a comment about. It's about production value. Now, you listen to a lot of high-level production value music today. It doesn't matter what genre it is that, to me, on the audio spectrum, three-dimensionally, everything sits way in the back, and you can hear it back there, and it's pushed to the back, and then everything, you know, the vocals and stuff are brought to the front, and it's an artificial feeling. No, it's real warm sounding in your ear. It's ear candy, but it's artificial. If you go to a club, like let's pretend we got in a time machine and we went and saw ZZ Top play at the Warehouse in New Orleans in 1972 when they were in their 20s and they were just making this stuff up as they went along, it wasn't smooth sounding. It was very rough and raw and visceral. And when you hear that, you know it. And so when we get in the studio, I want to make sure we don't lose that quality to what we're doing. So that's why when you play, you know, the first song on the lead off, Creep Into You, the guitar at one point just became this kind of animal, you know. Rawr. And that was on purpose because I didn't want to lose the fact that we had this little smooth-sounding blues number. And that's not all we were doing. And,
right.
You know, I felt it was a disservice to singers like Amy Winehouse and so forth that they sanitized her band.
Right.
So they were like subservient to her voice. They should have been pushing her voice because she has such a great talent.
Yeah.
It would have taken her to a different place. And that's my philosophy about it. And I know that's weird.
Right.
I'm stumping, but that's just it.
But I feel like our sound would be appreciated in places like New Orleans, places like Austin, places like New York, places where people still value live performances and music and are willing to pay to go see it. And
you come away with more than just listening to music.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we're here to give whoever wants to see us, we're here to give them a show.
Exactly.
Definitely.
<Yeah.
laughs> Definitely. And while we're talking about it, let's chat about the live shows for a second. What's the biggest challenge in bringing these songs to the stage as opposed to bringing them into the studio?
God, the stage part's easy.
The stage part is easy. That's the best part.
That's the easiest part.
I guess the hardest part is making sure my guitar isn't too damn loud.
Yeah.
But
the hardest part is leaving the hot curlers in my hair for that long before the show. Being up there is easy. We're at home when we're up there.
Yeah.
Nothing feels better.
Yeah, I think where we end up having to do a lot more work is bringing the live show to the studio.
Yeah, that's
part of the challenge.
The inverse.
Because
you get nerves.
Yeah.
No. All right, so like you played Hornet's Nest earlier tonight, and one of the great things that came out of that particular performance to me, because that was a studio performance, was that the primary guitar part was entirely live with the rest of you guys. That was a one-take deal. And bam,
right.
It was there. And so all the solo and everything was a one-take deal. And it was sort of the only song on the record that we accomplished that, like, without dubs, you know. And the only thing I did on that song that I dubbed was just some backing guitar to kind of fill things out, you know. But other than that, it was a live take. And that's hard to do in the studio. It's easy to get up on stage and go, let's do 3 hours of music. Bam, we're going to do this, because we do. We do that all the time. But you get in the studio and say, we're going to do one song, and this is, you know, do or die, that's a different prospect. It's not as relaxed, you know, so you have to work your way into it.
Well, you know, what's interesting is I think we grew up as a band on stage, and that's our comfort zone. That's where we feel the most comfortable. That's where we let loose. That's where we experiment. I know that, you know, there are times when we're playing live shows and we've brought a particular song into the rehearsal room, we've worked on it a few times, and then we decide, okay, we're going to bring it into this, you know, play it out live, and we learn more about the song when we actually play it live. And so
when
that's what
on.
We feel. And when we're on and things happen and we create, we find that groove, and then when we do go into the studio, we really sort of have a sense for what we want to capture in the studio, because all of that's been done in our comfort zone, which is on stage.
Yeah.
The studio's work, stage, is swimming around in the swimming pool, that's just fun.
That's easy.
Yeah.
That's just fun.
Cool deal. And I know we talked about you guys listening to the record 16 million times before the release. But also, was there another key factor into the making of Little Sin to make it sound cohesive and flow from track to track? Was layout and transitions between songs, how it flows, you know, discussed between the band? And again, all these are potentially big decisions. So how did you guys tackle all of this?
We spent a lot of time on that, and we made a lot of conscious decision about the song orders and, you know, where we're going to be on stuff. So I would say that was something that was just sort of a labor. You know, it just takes time to listen to over and over again until you get the sequence right. Remember, we went back and forth.
We write down different iterations of, you know, song order or... and then we would listen to the rough recordings in that order and say, God, no, that's not right. Or, you know, we actually took a couple of songs out that we thought were going to be on the record that didn't seem to fit. And we're like, all right, we'll save those for the next record.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, you know, it's nice to have a surplus of songs.
And thank God for iTunes. We could make your playlist.
Exactly.
Sort it a million different ways in a few seconds. I mean, it was, you know, it wasn't always like that, but. Exactly right. What Sarah was saying is that we ran it through about a million times, and you know, it's like that. There was that moment when we said, "Okay, Caught Up in the Tears has to be the first song."
It's the first song. It's gotta be. It's like
the way that starts. It's like this big thing.
And this is definitely gonna be the last song.
Yes, this is definitely the last song.
Okay, that's two. Great. All right. Nine more left.
So that was a challenge for us.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that helped is, you know, we haven't talked about Catherine's song on the album, and it's sort of that very beautiful
lullaby
that, in fact, there here in Richmond, there was a collection done by a couple of broadcasters. They did a lullaby project and a bunch of bands to kind of be part of this compilation. And that one ended up being on there, and quite honestly, it helped in trying to figure out the sequence, because it's such a unique song and such a hard departure from you know, what we normally do, that it helped create the flow, because we knew it had to be in the second half of the album, but it couldn't be last, and it couldn't be first, and all of that. So that sort of helped, I think. And we haven't talked about that, but that is an absolutely beautiful song that Paul wrote for his third daughter. And I think it has an absolutely awesome place on the album.
Yes, sir. All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this interview with me and letting me in on what's coming up for Vexine. So take a moment here to let us all know where to find you online and how fans can stay connected to the news feed. And as always, I like to offer you the Vigilantes Radio open floor here at the end of the interview, so you can bring up anything else you wanted to say or talk about.
Awesome. You can find us at Vexine.com. There you can find our schedule, have connections to us on iTunes. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at VexineRVA. We are also on Facebook at Facebook.com/Vexine. And we do live performances with Facebook Live on our feed. We did one tonight. And We're also on CD Baby. You can find all three of our records there. And on Spotify, there's a cool little shuffle feature there, and you can shuffle all three Vexine records at one time. It's kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's us. That's where we are.
And we'd like to thank you.
Please, yeah, definitely. Thanks for having us on the show.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
It'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get to see you.
All right,
when
yeah.
When you come to town.
Yes, 2 days from here.
Great.
All right, let's take a break, and when we come back, it's seat time.
All right.
And do you guys know what the hot seat is?
Yeah, I think we're ready for this.
We're going to do a little, all right. I think we might play a little song for you. Is that all right?
This is totally cool. So after the music break, we'll be right back to put Vexen in our traditional hot seat here. Either some vocals, poems, spoken word, freestyle rap. Sarah busts out jokes, stories, live instruments. You never know what these creative minds and vessels will produce in the spotlight. So when we come back, we'll find out if they have what it takes to be put on the spot, a test of their true artistry. Here is Vexen. Tell me.
Tell me one
That was Tell Me by Vexine. And we are back live. I would actually love to see that one perform live. I like that song.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Glad you
I think
like
that's
going
to be my favorite one. Yeah.
It's one of my favorites. I think it was Jorge's favorite.
I like that.
Cool.
I like writing it.
All right, so we are back, and you know what time it is. It is hot seat time. Let's see what's
happening.
Yay!
Excellent. I'm not going to rap for you.
Oh.
All I know is Fat Fat Freddy tell me everybody's high. DJ said my I only know part of Blondie song. And we're going to do... I think we're going to do Catherine's song for you, the little lullaby off of our record.
Okay.
All right. It goes yours like this. Darling, then we'll come up tomorrow morning. Chase away the darkness and the shadow.
Incredible. Wow.
Thank you.
That was incredible.
A little lullaby.
Great job, guys. Great job.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Definitely. Oh, any final words before we part ways?
It was a pleasure talking to you. We enjoyed making our record, and we certainly appreciate the time you took to speak with us and your in-depth questions. It was really nice. Great interview. Sorry we talked to
you. No doubt. No. It's perfect. These are the type of interviews I love, so it was perfect.
Great.
Definitely. All right, cool, listeners, thank you as always for checking out our podcast over here at Vigilantes Radio. All episodes are available for free download once the show ends, and that includes past shows as well. If you would like to request music or send something for to play, email it to VRadio, and that's V as in Victor, at onlyonemediagroup.com. We are genre free, we do not judge, and we absolutely do not base our opinions on hearsay but facts. And of course, you don't believe that because everything I say is right. So deal with it. Online. Get over it. Just kidding. But on behalf of myself, Danny Mussolini, not related to the other Mussolini, and my co-hosts are off tonight. We definitely appreciate you for tuning in either afterwards or live with us. Make sure you spread the word. And also a very, very special thanks to our talented guest, Vexine, for joining us tonight. And just remember to take this with you. Remember to be great and be yourself. Peace.